Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Food is hard. That isn't the first time I've said this on the show, and unfortunately, it's probably not going to be the last. But this week, here in the United States, it's Thanksgiving, and a lot of people are having conversations around food. And when we talk about food, we aren't just talking about what we eat or how we make it, but food becomes a conversation about who we are as people and the values that we have, how much things cost. Then there's even more nuanced cultural conversations around who owns what food and how we gatekeep food and who gets to make what food and where food comes from and how all of that intersects with race and gender and nationality and sexual orientation and expression and identity and all sorts of other things. And it gets back to the maxim that food is hard. And it becomes even harder if you are somebody who experiences disability. If you are a disabled person, food becomes not just what you are eating or how you're eating it, but like this minefield of preparing it, of thinking about preparing it, of possibly even dreading preparing it, of being judged for what you eat and how you eat it. And that is where my guest today comes in. Carolyn runs Epicurious Expeditions. She celebrates the intersection of food and culture, and she also is known for not only fixing British dishes, but making food disability friendly. Carolyn is one of my favorite new-to-me people of 2025, and I am thrilled that I get to round out this year with this conversation. So without any further ado, here's Carolyn. Carolyn, welcome to Head on Fire. Thank you so much for being here. Hello. I am such a fanboy. I'm going to try to be so chill. No, I'm going to try to be so chill. Hi.
Thank you so much for having me. How are you?
I get to talk to you today. So my entire day is made. I can't even begin to tell you. Like,
oh my God.
I am wildly obsessed with your content. But for people who are not me, and this might be their first exposure to you, tell people who you are and what it is that you do.
Hi, I am Carolyn. I go by Epicurious Expeditions. I have a cooking channel. It's just a little bit more than cooking, though. We tell stories. We talk about our travel tales. I talk about my family. And I also specialize in making cooking videos for people with disabilities. So I have a set of rules that I follow that makes it good for people with different types of disabilities. So I think about intellectual disabilities as well as physical disabilities. So we have, you know, a set of rules that, you know, make sure that it's accessible to everyone. And I do also reimagine British food.
I kind of want to start there because that is how I found you. And all of the other goodness that you do, all the other amazing, good, wonderful things came after that for me in my timeline, the way the algorithm worked for me. I want to go to, one, how'd you start cooking? And two, what was the beef with British food? Because, like, I also have the same beef, but when I say that I have a beef with it, people get really mad at me. So tell me where you started in the kitchen and how you took aim at British food.
Okay, I actually started cooking when I was 4 years old. The tender age of four, I started cooking. My mom had lupus and she had arthritis and a lot of exhaustion. So she had to grow us up a little fast. That it was a necessity. So at four, I made my first thing of ramen. This was before cup of noodles. I'm telling my age. So I had to make my ramen on the stove. Mm-hmm. And that was the first thing I cooked. And then she also taught me how to wash dishes after myself. So I had to grow up pretty fast. And then I really took a passion for cooking. It helped me stay connected to my grandmother. She was a big cook. So I really had a passion for it. So that became like my niche in the household. I was the cook. My oldest sister did the hair. And my middle sister, who has recently passed, she did all the artsy things. So the decoration and anything that the feng shui, that was her. So we all had our things. So that was my introduction to cooking. And I've been cooking ever since.
It is incredible. First of all, your house sounds really fun.
was.
That it sounds really was. Good. But like, okay, so a lot of people enjoy doing a thing when they're a kid, but how did enjoying doing the thing turn into, baby, I can now like cook for real real, and I've got a cooking channel? Like, where did that arc come from? How did you go pro?
Well, I never stopped loving cooking. So when I was in undergrad, I used to like have dinner parties with my friends. And of course, there was more alcohol than food, but I used to host dinner parties. And I have a friend named Eddie. He's a professional chef, classically trained in French cuisine. And he actually ended up moving across the street from my house. And so
that's
he
convenient.
Would come over
that's
when
universe
I was
telling
cook.
You. That's the universe telling you that you're God's favorite. Yep.
Right. So he would come over my house and straight Gordon Ramsay me. He would tell me this is dreadful. He told me my yams were fibrous and mushy. I'll never forget that critique. That's when I learned to like get away from survival mode and get rid of the tips of the sweet potatoes because they're very fibrous. So he was like, your yams are so fibrous. And I was like, oh my God, okay, let me step my game up. And so he taught me a lot. He critiqued me a lot. And that's when I learned like classic techniques. That's when I learned how to sear a steak. That's when I learned different things. Like I grew up with the soul food, but I learned different cuisines and different techniques, you know, from being friends with him.
What you say really resonates with me about taking the criticism, which sounds on its surface kind of funny and almost mean, unless you're somebody that like really wants to get good at a thing.
Yes.
And I think that we are seeing kind of just broadly speaking, people don't want to be bad at something in order to get good. And they think that like criticism or critique or something is just like always bad. Like I don't ever want to hear I don't ever want to hear anybody tell me that I'm not just like nailing this. And I think that like I have an expando file of every single bit of criticism that I ever received on my writing, like starting from the age of like 10, because like all of it made me a better writer, right? Like all of it was part of the journey, and I craved that kind of feedback. And so hearing that feedback, you know, your yams are too fibrous, but that means now I know to cut this part, and now I know how to make this better. That is such an inspiration in its own right, like learning to be okay being bad at something in order to get good.
And I find that I take critique a lot better if it's something that I'm really passionate about and the person speaking has demonstrated that they know what they're talking about.
Well, for
sure. I tasted his cooking, so I knew that he knew what he was talking about.
And that goes to it because like not everybody's when you're a creative person or when you're somebody who's just like really desperately trying to like become somebody who is like in a creative field or something, you have to learn one, how to take criticism, but also two, that not everybody's opinion matters. Not everybody's opinion can matter.
Exactly.
But figuring out whose opinion is going to matter to you is really important. And seeing that like trusted expert be able to come to you and say, now listen, you can get as good as me, but you have to, you know, this first. It's like, okay, but like, you know, random person on this or like person coming into the restaurant who only ever eats like Tex-Mex or something and eats your food and is like, I don't know, this should be spicy. And it's like, okay, well, it's a Swedish dish. So that's not going to be spicy. Sorry.
Yes.
You know.
And I feel like everybody has their lane and you have to stay in your lane.
Yes, absolutely. That is such good, like that is such a good and necessary behavior to like model, like to your kids, to the audience, to people, like to people in your life. That's incredible. But like, why the beef with the British?
I'm so glad you asked because some people think I just out of the clear blue sky decided to just come for them.
I saw you. I came across your feed. I came across your feed when you were like, it takes a black woman to fix beans. Like beans on toast is so bad. It takes a black woman to fix it. And I was like, followed, sign me up, favorites. Every video I want to see, like, gimme. And I was hooked. Tell me about the beef with the British.
Okay, so you remember when TikTok got banned for the first time?
I do.
You were there.
I was there. I remember, like, being there as, like, the doors shut, and we were all like, bah!
Scrolling. I was scrolling, and then that pop-up.
Yep.
Yes. So then the British took the opportunity to tease us and to say, ah ha ha, now that the Americans are gone, I can eat my beans and toast on peace, babe. I can eat it in peace, babe. And it was a viral video where this black woman was cutting her beans on toast, like neener neener about like us being banned. I was like, oh, okay. So then when we got the ability to come back to TikTok, I was like, I know exactly what I'm going to do. And when I say that throwing the plate was an ADHD impulse, it felt so right. And I had a mess to clean up after that, but it felt so right. It felt so necessary. And then like that video exploded. I did not see it doing as well as it did, and people saying, yes, now do this dish next, do this dish next. British people do have a history and like a culture of having food from the medieval period that has never been updated. And I think it's high time that it gets updated. So it just kind of worked out that I was able to, you know, get them back for the jabs they took at us and, you know, elevate their dishes because there is opportunity there.
Yeah. I will say, listen, to their credit. Now, I have no idea whether or not what I ate was a fluke or not. But I did eat. I have a friend who does an international night every month.
Okay.
With like her friends and family and stuff. And England came up and she's like, do you want to come by for English food? And I was like, no, because I like myself. But I just so happened to have some free time and I went and they had mushy peas. And I was like, there is no chance on this earth that I want to eat that. And she's like, you have to try this. And I was like, why? And she's like, because we found out it's not a regular pea. Like, it's not like a little bitty pea. There's a special pea. British have special peas. The British have special peas. And it's like, and it was imported and like prepared. Listen, I have to give it to them. I about licked that bowl clean. I don't know what it was.
Really?
I don't know how they prepared them. It was so good. And then I brought it home for my husband. He wouldn't let me have he ate the whole rest of it. So I don't know what that particular pea was for the mushy peas, but I will give it to them. That tasted good. But yeah, the rest of it, I was a little.
I've had mushy peas. And while I will say it's not as bad as you would think. Okay. Maybe my opinion isn't fair because I thought it was guacamole when I put it on my plate. I had it at a YouTuber event, actually. I went to a YouTube happy hour in LA and they had mushy peas and it was next to chips, right? So I'm thinking, oh, guacamole. Yes. Yes. So
see,
I loaded
I think
it up
was
on my
good
plate.
Because my expectations were in the toilet. My expectations were in the, like, I knew going in it was mushy peas and I was like, there's no chance this is good. None of this is going to be good. I don't know what it was. It was good, but maybe it was good in comparison with everything else. I have no idea.
But when you're expecting guacamole.
Yikes.
It's like, oh my God.
So how does cooking like show up in your life? What is the value of cooking for you, cooking for others, cooking, like, because your story tells me that, like, it started from, like, a learned self-sufficiency. Like, I learned how to do this so that I could take care of myself and others. And then my sister learned this skill and my other sister learned this skill and stuff. So it sounds like there's, like, a need there, but there's also an intersection where there is a caring for self and caring for others aspect. So talk to me a little bit about, like, the place that cooking has just in your life and in your community.
I will say that it has evolved. Like you said, it started off as a necessity, something I had to do for survival, but it quickly grew into a passion. As a kid, like, I wasn't watching cartoons and different things like that. I was watching Food Network. Okay. Emeril Lagasse raised me. Alton Brown raised me.
Bam.
Yes. Bam. The Two Hot Tamales, they raised me. Okay. I'm telling my age again. The Two Hot Tamales. Yeah, all of those. And I grew up loving to watch those. And then, you know, when I became an adult, you know, part of my social life was hosting dinner parties. So that became the thing. And then when I was dating, you know, I did cook for guys like, oh, come over. I made you a little something, something, you know, and I did a story time on how, like, my husband's first birthday after we got together, I made him a very special meal. And that also went viral, which was pretty cool. So it's become a love language. It's kind of how I show love to people. And I do, you know, host dinner parties, not as much as I used to. And they've becoming like more small, more intimate, and with a lot less alcohol than they were when I was an undergrad and younger. But it is a love language. It's how I connect with people. And it's also how I remember the people that I've lost. I've lost a lot of people, you know, in my life. And I'll make the dishes that we used to make together to remember them, and dishes we used to share together to remember them. And it absolutely helps me feel connected to them again. Yeah. So it has been life to me. And then when I started my disability friendly series, because I blew out my knee, I tore my meniscus, and I had to have a surgery to have it removed. And so I wasn't able to walk for a while. And I missed cooking so much. And then I was like, oh my God, I know there are other people who have also lost some of their mobility and ability. And I know they miss cooking as well. So I'm like, what if I did a series on cooking, you know, accessibility, like so that people who are disabled can still cook? Because I had to modify everything for myself when I was, you know, on one leg. So yeah, it has evolved.
I really appreciate that. As disability advocates are really, they constantly talk about how disability is kind of an inevitability for most of us. Most of us at some point or another are going to intersect with disability at some point, either temporarily or permanently. Mm-hmm. Either we are temporarily not going to be able to walk or not be able to use our hands, or maybe we will, you know, get a concussion, you know, some kind of temporary mental impairment or something, vision impairment, something like that. Mm-hmm. But all the way to, yeah, statistically speaking, a lot of us are going to become disabled some kind. We will experience some kind of disability as we age. It's just a statistical likelihood. So the idea that, you know, you were able to take that temporary thing and turn it into an entire series is so smart and important, because it can be and likely will be any of us. It'll happen to me at some point. Walk me through. Okay, you were talking to me earlier about the rules. You have rules.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
One, what are the rules? And two, how'd you come up with them?
The rules are no stove, so no direct interaction with fire or any extraordinarily high temperatures. Okay. That's one rule. No knives. That's a big one. So we're not chopping anything. We don't chop. And if there's something soft, we use like a pasta wheel, something safe. And then also, can this be done in a seated position? Can a person put this device on a table and sit at the table and do all the steps sitting at the table? Because there's so many different levels of ability. And also, we cut down as many steps as possible, because people who have both physical and mental disabilities can have issues with exhaustion and stamina. So we cut out all steps that are not absolutely necessary. Yeah, we keep everything nice and simple. And the rules come from members of my family. Like I said, my mom had lupus. She was exhausted. I had to do the cooking for her because she didn't always have the energy, the stamina. She wasn't always able to stand. She had really bad arthritis. So that comes from her. It also comes from my son. He is autistic. He is a level 3, diagnosed now level 3, depending on who looks at him. Could be level 2, could be level 3. So he does have some significant challenges. So I like to help incorporate him in the kitchen, but I don't want him to use a knife at this point. One day he'll probably be able to do it safely. He is growing and learning and blossoming and has a great team of people that's helping him out. So one day he'll be able to use a knife, but I know there are some people who may never be able to safely interact with knives. So let's just cut that out, because we can use the frozen pre-chopped version. So that's where that rule comes from.
It's incredible. And as your platform has grown, are you finding new rules or new adjustments or new things? Like, are people contributing? And how has the reception been from the audience at large?
The reception has been overwhelming. Sometimes I can't even read my comments, because I will sit up and cry. People with amazing stories share their stories with me, and it's overwhelming. And I do appreciate the feedback. People say like, oh, have you considered doing a low carb one for people who have diabetes? And I'm like, okay, I can do one of those. And some people say, oh, can you do low FODMAP? That one's tough. I'm working on it. It's because that one has a lot of rules. So I'm like, oh my goodness. I'll think of a dish and then I'll find out, oh, that has an ingredient that I can't use. So I'm like really like working on that. And then some people say, oh, I'm a amputee. I only have one arm. You know, can this be done with one arm? And I think, okay, how can I make this easier for someone who may be an amputee? And I'll just like incorporate all of my comments and take everything into consideration and try to be as thoughtful as possible when I'm like crafting my recipes and making my adjustments to make sure everything is accessible.
And you know what I personally really love about that? Because what a lot of people don't realize is when you advocate for accessibility, it's good for everybody. Like, it's good for everybody. Like, I always talk about airplane seats. People get real weird when people talk about, you know, if you're a heavier set person wanting to be comfortable, to be able to sit in a seat and not, you know, be in pain for a flight or something like that. But I don't deal with that. I'm 6'6". I'm really tall. You know what's great for me? Also, more room on planes.
Absolutely.
It's good for me
too. It helps everybody.
It's good for everybody. Nobody likes feeling crammed into an airplane. Yeah. And if it helps somebody accessibly or be able to access that in a way that is uplifting and affirming and comfortable, it's probably going to be good for you too. Because we aren't going to make things worse by making them more accessible. We're going to make things better by making them more accessible. And what I love about your recipes is I love to cook. I don't know about a love language, but it's certainly something that I love to do for myself and for other people, just like you. It's something that shows that I care. It's something that I can kind of like do to work out a little bit of stress or something, but I don't always have all the time and I don't always have all the ingredients. And your recipes not only are great for people on a time crunch, but sometimes it helps inspire me to be like, okay, well, I want to do this, but maybe I could do, you know, I could take these ingredients, the ingredients that I have, and do a version of this.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I try to have like recipes that aren't like dependent on having this exact thing. And I try to mention like, oh, if you don't have chicken, use beef. If you don't have beef, use pork. You know, if you want to make it vegan, skip this ingredient or replace it with that ingredient. I try to, you know, make sure that it can work for a lot of different people. And as you said, like accessibility helps everybody. Everybody can benefit from that.
Now, something that we are dealing with and that we are going to be dealing with like this time of year and going into the rest of the year is a lot of preaching about food and health and food and what you should and shouldn't be putting into your body and all of that. Yeah. We like to, you know, fed is best goes right out the window when suddenly people want to finger wag and say you ate too much pie at Thanksgiving or something. So food is hard for a lot of people. People don't know what to eat or how much to eat or when to eat or something like that. How do you hope that your platform can be used to make food a little less scary for other people? And how do you contend with the intersection of just trying to feed people, knowing that sometimes food content gets lumped in with health content?
Right. And I do sometimes get criticism like, oh, you're making food for people with disabilities, but you're using meat and meat is bad for this and meat is bad for that. And you're using this and then people with this condition can't have that. And I'm like, there are 8 billion people on this earth. Different people need different diets. And that's something that they should talk with their doctor. You know, I'm going to make a wide variety of different options. People can choose what's right for them. I'm not here to sit on a high horse. I'm not here to preach. Different people have different needs. And it's important that we don't like paint everybody with this, you know, sweeping brush. And then it's important to experience joy. Have that dessert every now and again. Okay. Have that dessert, you know, because you eat a lot of meals in your week, in your month. Balance. It's all about balance. Some of my recipes are downright indulgent. Other ones, completely vegan, high fiber, high protein, low carb, you know, all the things that, you know, people want. Have balance. You know, eat more of the things that are, you know, more nutritious when, if that's what your body needs at the moment. And if you need some comfort, I got you there too.
Like sometimes my spirit just needs the chocolate.
It
like
does.
It needs it.
And it deserves it.
The world is dark and full of terrors.
Absolutely.
But like, have you had cake? Cake's good.
Cake is amazing. Cake is necessary. Cake is absolutely necessary. And one thing I got comments I made like a single serve Rice Krispie treat video that was disability friendly. People were like, oh, I love this because I will make an entire tray and eat the whole thing. And I'm like, I will not judge you if you do that. But this is a good option if you want to have your one treat and then get right back to eating how your doctor told you to eat.
Yeah. You know? The thing I find myself getting really addicted to. So we're just outside Chicago. So the winters here are long and dark and wet and cold, and it's gross.
It's such a beautiful city though.
Yeah, in the summer. Daylight is few and far between from late September to like May.
Mm-hmm.
It sucks. But I will find myself. I learned how to make mug cakes.
Are great.
Like 7-8 years ago. But like, oh man. Like every day or like every other day or something. Like I will make a mug cake. I will make a mug cake. I will put honey in it. I'll put chocolate syrup in it. I'll make a little homemade whipped cream and throw that in there. Like being able to just like throw something together. And it's like, well, I don't want to make a whole thing. But mm-hmm. if I throw a few ingredients in a cup and I go mix and put it in the microwave for 30 seconds or 60 seconds or whatever it is, I can have cake.
Yes.
I can have joy, and it's warm and it's comforting and it's fun and it's just a little affirmation and it's everything you need.
Yes, because if I make a whole cake, I am going to shimmy in the kitchen every hour on the hour, take a little sliver.
If I make a whole cake, I will eat a whole cake.
Yes, and that is a good reminder. I meant to do some mug cakes and I forgot. Now you just reminded me.
I love a mug cake. Tablespoon of this, tablespoon of that, little mix, da 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 da.
Yeah.
And they're great because you can put anything in them. It could be a chocolate, peanut butter. I'll do that that peanut butter fit powder.
Okay.
Like the powdered peanut butter stuff. And mm-hmm. I'll put that in there and I'll have a peanut butter mug cake with like cinnamon chips. I get real curious.
Two.
Yeah, with the
PB2 would be amazing.
Yeah, that's what I use. The PB2, the peanut butter powder. Yeah. That's what I use.
Yes.
The great thing about a mug cake is it's so small. You can just experiment. Like I'm not mm-hmm. wasting a whole pan. I'm not getting my whole kitchen dirty. I can just,
exactly.
I'm like, oh, well, instead of a tablespoon of cocoa powder, what if it's a tablespoon of this peanut butter? Or what if it's a, you know, this or what? Yeah, you can get real creative and it's fun.
And that's the
And if it's terrible, it's this much cake you're wasting. It's a tablespoon, you know, it's like 3 or 4 tablespoons of ingredients you're throwing in the trash.
Yeah, and I think it's also a great way to experiment when you're on like restricted diets. I used to be keto, and so I would make a bunch of keto mug cakes because nobody else in my family would eat those keto desserts.
With the almond flour, right? Yeah.
Yes, I think it was great. And I've seen people do vegan versions where you skip out the egg and it still rises. It still works really well.
Yeah, with vinegar, so, right? You do it with white vinegar.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And then gluten-free. You could do a gluten-free one. So I think mug cakes are so versatile and I absolutely love them.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. How is cooking showing up? So you have kids, right? Are they interested? Are they interested in cooking?
My daughter, so much.
Really?
You can see her hands in a lot of my videos.
Really?
Like, I want to help you.
Have you been surprised by a few recipes here or there? Has she taken over the kitchen yet?
No, she's only 5.
Hey, you
she's
were
only
4.
5. So she,
you were 4.
That's true.
There you go.
That's true. So she hasn't started innovating yet, but she definitely was like, oh, can I measure it? Can I do it? Can I put it in? Can I have a turn? Can I stir it? And I'm like, okay, baby, go ahead, stir it. Like, and so sometimes when you see me stirring, it's not me stirring, it's her.
So
yeah, she loves it.
I think that when people think of disability friendly or anything that becomes an accessibility conversation or an accommodation conversation or something like that. One, they think that the food might lack flavor, or two, maybe the flip side of it is maybe it is smaller portions or something, and then I can't save it for later. Or then there is the task of having to store it and all of that. How do you go about considering like the life around the person who is making the food? Like, assuming, what assumptions do you have to make? And then how do you, you know, accommodate for that?
For almost all of my recipes, you get about 4 to 6 servings. So I said it that way because, one, if you do very large portions, there may be a difficulty lifting, you know, a big 5-pound roast, a big, you know, bowl of this or that. So I always aim for about 4 to 6 servings. That way they can meal prep. They can stick half of it in the freezer if they're just cooking for themselves, or if they have a family, like they can have that meal for the family. Now, of course, my recipes can be scaled. You would have to just, you know, adjust the time and, you know, add a little additional time if you want to double it. But I always aim for about 4 to 6 servings in my recipes, unless I state otherwise, like my single serve Rice Krispie treats, or like I think I did a microwave chana masala and that one was just about 2 servings. So unless I state like, okay, this one's a small, then I usually aim for about 4 to 6 servings. I find that's a happy medium between having a whole lot of food that may be difficult to lift and not having enough for tomorrow and having to cook all over again.
You know what else you just reminded me of? Something that you're pretty brilliant at and always very careful to do is giving credit away for an idea or giving inspiration credit or something. Like you were talking about chana masala. So you are really good about saying, okay, here's the recipe inspiration that I got from this chef or this cook or this channel or whatever. My recipe is not to like say that this is my culture or these are my people or I'm not taking anything. I am trying to find a way to do this just with my disability-friendly rules or something like that. And in the world of content creation, people get so weird about credit. Why is it important for you to do that? But two, how do you kind of ethically navigate that, what can sometimes be a sticky conversation about like cultural ownership, cultural gatekeeping around food, like when it comes to adopting and adapting?
Giving credit to me is so very important for a number of reasons. One, it does not take anything from me. It does not reduce the amount of money that I get. It does not make me look like I don't know what I'm doing. There is no reason not to credit someone. And I know what it's like to be on the receiving end of doing something and someone taking what I did and not giving me credit for it. I know what that feels like on an individual level. As far as my videos, I've seen people do bar for bar of my videos and not give me credit. And then on a big scale, just being a Black woman and existing in my Black womanhood, we get sticky bunned, as I like to call it, as you know, like Black women often do our like baby hairs. And that's like something that we've been doing since probably the 80s. No, before that, really, even in the 70s, I've seen that. And then suddenly, you know, people are doing their baby hairs, and they give it a new name, sticky buns or like boxer braids and that sort of thing. So I think acknowledging where the culture comes from is so important, and it's so respectful and so necessary. So I'll say this chana masala is an Indian dish from Indian culture. This chicken adobo is from Filipino culture. And I'll give a shout out and I'll say, you know, Filipino food is often very easy to make, very affordable to make, and so good. It's like one of the most slept on cuisines out there. So it's very important for me to say, this is where I got this dish from, because I know what it's like to be on the other end of that and not get the credit for, you know, my creativity and the collective creativity of people who look like me. So I will always go above and beyond to say, this is where I got it from. And then when other creators inspire me, I'll say, this creator inspired me. Doesn't take anything away from me.
And that's how, instead of it being theft, it's just iteration and adaptation and appreciation, instead of like, I'm the lady that does Indian cuisine, even though I'm not Indian, like, you know.
Right. Like,
and that's how those, it's as simple as that.
Yes. It's important to always lead with respect. Respect is so important. And you know, what you put out sometimes you receive it back. So it's important. Like if I want to be respected, it's important for me to be respectful. So I'll always say, this is where I got it from, you know, and I'll give homage and respect to the people who innovated it.
Unless it's the British. And then it's disrespect all the way down.
Now, this is the British version over here.
You really will. You'll hold it up and be like,
this is what they did.
Is this your god?
Yes. Is this your god?
Totem hole? Really? Okay.
Right. Like, you're not going to cut that sausage up. You're just going to slap it right on the plate.
Put it right there. This is what we're doing. We're eating like we're still being bombed. Okay.
Right.
Yep. Yep.
Like we're watching jousting and sword competitions and drinking mead.
Goodness. Okay. So I just have to ask some like favorite stuff. Like what's comfort food to you? What do you love in your own life? Like I come to your house, I come to your kitchen. What's your, you know, comfort, big holiday meal go-to?
Oh my God, I love soul food. That was my first food. The first food I learned. I was raised in a house. A lot of times I was raised with both my mother and my grandparents who are from Mississippi. They were sharecroppers from Mississippi and their soul food was amazing. And so I bonded a lot with my grandmother in the kitchen. So making collard greens is almost like a religious experience for me. There's a process to it and I just love it. And it's so flavorful and comforting. It's filling, like when you have like your cornbread, your greens, and like a good smothered meat on the side. It's so good. And it always hits the spot every single time. So that's my favorite. That's my comfort food. But in my travels, I've learned food from all over the globe and I really enjoy and have an appreciation for a lot of different cuisines, but that will always be home, you know. And even connecting with my Nigerian half, I do love Nigerian food as well. But growing up, soul food was my staple.
Are you a turkey Thanksgiving person or are you some, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Cause I know that a lot of people have started like doing away with turkey because it's like, guys, we all agree that turkey's bad, right? It's not good.
Everybody hates turkey if they haven't tried my recipe.
See, there you go. See, there yeah. you go. I will say the best turkey I've ever had is a deep fried turkey.
That can be really good too.
I do
love a fried turkey when the skin is nice.
I mean, you're
going to
burn your house down, but it's so good.
Got to do it outside. Definitely got to do it outside. I've seen people do it indoors. I would never.
No, don't do that.
I would never. You need to be
have
like
you
yards,
seen the new contraptions yards. Where it's like half a bath of oil and it's like rotating the turkey in the Yeah, they're doing like high tech deep fried turkey now. Where
that's
like,
actually a good idea.
Yeah,
that's
a it's
really
a pretty good
idea.
I'm not ever gonna do it. I'm not ever gonna do it. I will buy the deep fried turkey from you, but I'm not gonna do it. I don't trust myself.
My uncle is the family turkey fryer. So when a turkey needs to be fried, that's my uncle's duty, and he's
Does
also
he have
getting
a big
into
pole
smoking them
and a hook. And is he doing that? Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
and the outside, like propane, deep fryer thing.
Yep. Yeah. And you're getting like all that, you're going to Costco and you're getting all the oil they have. And
the big box of peanut oil.
Yep. Yep. What about Christmas? Is it ham for you?
For Christmas, I actually do Mexican food, believe it or not.
Really? Oh, tamales.
I'm from LA. Tamales.
Yeah.
Every year we have to have tamales.
I have to tell you this. I have to tell you this terribly embarrassing story about me. So my husband's Mexican. And
Okay.
I remember like the first Christmas where we were going to his family for Christmas. Mm-hmm. And this was like almost 20 years ago. I'm old. And me talk all about all the Christmas because God, I was so busy and I was still in school. I think I was still in school. And we'd been working so hard and I was so tired and I couldn't wait for Christmas food. Oh, the ham that I was going to eat, the stuffing I was going to eat, the mashed potatoes and the pumpkin pie. God, all the food I couldn't wait to eat at Christmas. And that man just let me talk and said nary a word. And we get in our car and we drive like 5 hours to San Antonio to be with us. Family, and walk in, and we go to dinner, and there are five kinds of tamales, and that is dinner. And I was like,
yes.
phenomenal. Since then, it is not Christmas unless there's tamales. Because it's been, you know, 20 years of my life at this point. But that man really just let me go on and on about all the white people food I was going to eat. And then, and then it was like 3 dinner tamales and 2 dessert tamales. And that was, and I was like,
the pineapple tamale.
Yes. And there was like a strawberry one as well. There was a pink one and then the pineapple one. But yeah. And I like, she taught me how to make them. And she, the part of Mexico that my mother-in-law is from, they do the banana leaves instead of the corn husks.
Okay. Yes. And I've had those too.
And I love those because that banana leaf that seals that moisture in. Oh, it's so good. Yeah. It's so good. But okay, so but not everybody, you know, not every occasion is a holiday. Not every occasion is a big occasion. You're also a mom. Mm-hmm. How do you prep to feed your kids? Like, feeding kids is hard. Feeding not only yourself is hard, but some, you know, feeding kids is hard too. What are your recommendations for parents who come to your page who are looking for, you know, the ability to keep their kids fed and not bored of food?
Yes, that is a huge challenge that even I struggle with. So my oldest son is autistic, like I said, so he loves white rice. He loves ramen. Getting him to eat a vegetable is so difficult. So I always have a pot of rice, always. So every couple of days I make a new pot of rice, stick it in the fridge, and like we reheat that, he eats that. One thing that my kids love and makes it easy for me to get vegetables into them is sinigang, which is a Filipino soup. I do have a video on my channel with the sinigang. It's so good and so easy to make. It's so quick, so easy, so delicious. It has a very sour, because it's tamarind based, so it's very sour. So it kind of masks.
My husband loves this. Would love this. He loves tamarind.
He probably would. It is so good. And so yeah, I make sinigang all the time, and they just will gobble those vegetables down because the flavor of the tamarind kind of overtakes the taste of the different vegetables. So it just makes it so much easier for them to eat their vegetables. But they both love rice. So I always will have. Excuse me. I'll always have like a rice, and then I'll try to get some sort of vegetable in with them. And then like, I'll make it in bulk, and then they can eat it every day. And yeah, that's an easy way for me to get them some nutrition.
I'm going to have to go find that recipe. I want to eat that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I did spend a year and a half since that video. So I have to send it to you because it's a little buried, but it's very easy. You buy the packet. Noor makes the sinigang packet.
Really?
And you just put the meat, the veg, let it boil till it's done, add the packet, serve it over rice. That's all she wrote.
Oh, see, I'm about to throw this in my slow cooker.
Yes.
Stick it on high.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's how I'm going to do it. I love a slow cooker.
You're ready to eat. Yep.
Love it. Love it. Yes. Ooh, speaking of, so I know that you, so you said that you grew up on Emeril, but you also grew up on Alton Brown, who very famously hates kitchen gadgets, especially like single use. Yes, he hates single use kitchen gadgets. So like strawberry pickers that just their one and only job is to pick out the little stems or whatever. He's like, just use a knife. You do not need single use gadgets. It's clutter. It's landfill fodder. Absolutely. It's all of that. So you are, you know, there's a lot of people with a lot of budgets, with a lot of space constraints, with a lot of disability intersections and stuff. What, if anything, do you think would make most people most of the time's life a little easier in the kitchen? What are some gadgets or what are some cookery things that you would recommend people get?
The slow cooker. The slow cooker and the air fryer are really the bread and butter of my disability-friendly series. Because the air fryer can be a safe alternative to an oven because it cools down a lot faster. Reaching your hands in to retrieve the food is a lot safer in an air fryer than it is in the oven. So that's my bread and butter, the slow cooker, bread and butter. You can do so much with it. People think just soups. No, you can cook meats. You can cook beans. You can cook all sorts of things. I even have a pasta dish that I did in the slow cooker. So you can do pasta in the slow cooker. And I see a lot of people do slow cooker recipes, but they'll start it like on the stove and then move it. You don't have to do that. You can do the whole thing in the slow cooker. Will you get the perfect brown on your ground beef? No, But do you need a perfect brown? You know, do you need a perfect brown on your ground beef? Not necessarily. It can still be really delicious without it. So slow cookers and air fryers are my bread and butter. A good whisk, a good wooden spoon. If you have those things, you can make most of my dishes. That's it.
And that's see it. Now, and the newer slow cookers, like I have and the new Ninja, this is not, they didn't sponsor me. So, you know, get whatever.
But call but like the, us.
The, call. I will take that sponsorship. But like the new has like, they're impossible. Like I can sear
yeah.
it. There's the setting. I can sear in it. I can make roasts and stuff in it. It has little tray things. With the, you know, the fat and all that drips down just like a regular, mm-hmm. like if it's in a roasting pan or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like it has all those settings now. So like, yeah. even if you're just getting the slow cooker and you've never had one before, look around because there's some out there mm-hmm. that have those settings now and you can do the searing and the browning and all of that inside of those and machines.
I hear some of them have Wi-Fi now so that you can like from your phone,
yes.
turn it down to low. From your phone, say, oh, it's cooked long enough. Let me turn it off and switch.
Or if you're
it to
doing something
warm.
And it needs to reach an internal temperature, so the mm-hmm. time that it's cooking could be just about anything. I mean, you know, there's a big right. window of time. You know, it could be within 30 minutes. It could be an hour. You know, if you're checking on it periodically, but you're checking on mm-hmm. it like every half hour or so, but it got done 15 minutes ago or 20 yes. minutes ago, now it's yes. 15, 20 minutes overcooked.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And I really feel like once I get one of those and I am working on getting one of those, I feel like that'll be a game changer for me because people don't realize I'm filming a cooking video, but I'm also running my son to occupational therapy. We're running over here picking my daughter from school. So sometimes I start it and then I have to leave the house, you know. So being able to be able to turn, you know, turn it to just keep warm after a certain time, that will be a game changer for me. And I know it will be also for similarly situated families who have a million things going on at all times. So technology is accessibility. And I think people don't celebrate that enough. People really don't. And I think that's really a blessing.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Okay, it is the holidays. By the mm-hmm. time this episode comes out, we are in latter part of October when we're doing this conversation. But like, people are thinking about November, December. We're about to get into like, you know, 3 months of holidays. What's like? Okay, so I want to go to a holiday party, and I'm going to be at mm-hmm. a million holiday parties. Mm-hmm. What can I make? Mm-hmm. It's easy, fairly inexpensive, but it's going to make like it look. Because I love a recipe. Where it looks like I spent all day making something, but it, and also it's really good. What's like a go-to for you to take to the holiday, to take to like the event that like mm-hmm. is much more impressive than it actually was to make?
That's a tough one. See, I do like to bring mac and cheese when I go to an event. I do have a couple different mac and cheese recipes. I think they're all incredible. And I know everyone has their own favorite way to go about it, but I feel like if you make a mac and cheese and people can tell this didn't come from a box, people are going to love you. But it's really not that difficult to do a mac and cheese. You know,
are you a bake in the oven mac and cheese or are you on the stove?
That's a mandatory.
Gotta bake it.
That's a mandatory. That's a mandatory.
Gotta
bake it. That's mandatory. With the cheese on top, getting it golden and bubbly. Mm-hmm. That's mandatory.
Yep.
You know, so when you have a from scratch mac and cheese, it's not as hard as it looks. and people will really go crazy for it. I love a good mac and cheese. And what also I love to do that's really, really easy is a good long simmered collard green.
I've tried those before. I will say they're a little intimidating
because I mean,
like, no, well, I've had them. I haven't made them before, but like the washing and the prep and all of that, I feel like I'm going to do it wrong.
And you can mess it up when you do it from leaf, right? Mm-hmm. If you do it from a bunch and a leaf, that I say you have to be taught to make sure you get, because there can be bugs. I mean, nowadays people use pesticides, so there's not as many bugs now as there was when I was growing up, but you do have to pick it. You do have to wash it several times in a basin to basin method. So that can be a little complicated, but they do have cut and clean greens. So you can get them in the bag already washed, even though I still rewash them. They'll already be washed, stems already removed, they're already cut. So all you have to do is give them a good, you know, maybe two washes, and then they're ready to go. One thing I like to do that is so easy and makes it so effortless is I like to start on my base for my greens the day before in a slow cooker. I put my smoked meat in there, some onions, some seasonings, and then I just let the meat just simmer overnight to where the meat is fall off the bone and all of that broth is just infused with the flavor from the smoked meat. And then in the morning, I throw in the greens. So that way by dinner time, the greens are ready.
I want to eat that right now. You just made my mouth water so bad.
They will be the most flavorful greens you've ever had with the smoked meat simmering overnight. It's just incredible. It really is. And it's so low effort because you just throw it in, go to sleep. And then in the morning you have a pot liquor that makes you think of grandma. Like, definitely makes you think of grandma.
Speaking of grandma, we started this conversation. You started your cooking journey by, you know, mm-hmm. learning from your mom. Is mm-hmm. there a special recipe that makes you think of family? Is there something that you make like that, you know, what do you make when you want to think of your mom, your grandma, somebody, something like that? What's that special recipe for you?
And like I mentioned, on Christmas, we do Mexican food. My mom was known for her taquitos. Mm-hmm. My mom is Black, but we're from LA, and the cultural exchange is something that is way under celebrated. My mom also had the gift of reverse engineering. So she would go down to Overa Street. There used to be a big shopping, you know, like an outdoor shopping experience. They sold all kind of food. So she would go buy the taquitos, and she went home, did some reverse engineering. And then she would ask questions like, oh, how do you get the flavor like this? How do you get your guacamole like this? And they would answer, and she was able to get a taquito recipe that will knock your socks off. At her services, when she passed, everybody got up and talked about how good her taquitos was. So every year at Christmas, I make taquitos and tamales to remember my mom, because she made the best. And she also made the best German chocolate cake. So those were her two staples. Those were her claims to fame. My grandmother, she could make everything. Her cakes, her pies. She was the quintessential Mississippi girl. She, everything had pork in it. Everything was full of pork. Everything was full of butter. Everything tastes like, oh my God. Everything she made was amazing. My family did own a restaurant. Even though it wasn't a soul food restaurant, my family owned a restaurant. Everybody in my family can cook. Everybody. It's not just me. It's everybody. So yeah. Yes. Food and family.
So you grew up, you grew up in LA. I grew up in the South and Texas, and like family holiday meals, there's like a hierarchy structure to it. Like you start off being you're being allowed to bring things. And then like, once you've proven yourself, you kind of go up the ranks a little bit.
Yes.
Like topmost rank is like whoever makes the protein. So like, you know, for Thanksgiving, like the top is whoever like makes the turkey, like the top, you know, like that kind of thing. So you like start off, like if you, when you get old enough to start contributing, you're like on napkin and plate and, you know, soda duty. Yeah. Like you just have to be able to prove that you can show up. And then like, you'll get assigned like a side dish. You'll be allowed to make a side dish or assigned a side dish. And then like and you kind of like work your way up the side dishes, and then maybe you get trusted with the dessert. And then, you know, eventually you're hosting. So you make the protein and blah, 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 blah. Okay. And it creates like a fun sense of familial competition. Yes. If everybody can cook in your family, does that sense of familial competition, does that happen? Does that occur? And if so, how does that show up on the holidays?
We actually didn't. That's one thing I would say we did not have, because everybody had their lane and their dish that they could make and make it well. So, of course, you know, when we were all still here, my grandmother would do the turkey, the ham, the dressing. Those were her three. That's what she had. And then all the cakes and pies. So she did the proteins, the dressing, which stuffing, you probably know it as stuffing, and all the cakes and pies. That's what she did. That was her lane. She nailed it every time. My mom would do the potato salad. She would make her German chocolate cake. That was her lane. For me, it was the greens and the macaroni and cheese. That's what I made every single year.
Mm-hmm. Those are important.
And then my aunt was the one who would bring the wild card, because she liked to, you know, try different things. And there was a lot of hits. There were a couple misses. I hope she don't mind me saying. I hope she doesn't mind. She can cook. She can cook. But she would always experiment with different things. So certain things she would do, oh my God, we have to have this every year now. Other things, it's like, okay, that was fun. That was fun. So we all had our lane, and there wasn't so much a competition, because we all kind of knew our role. And then when I was like really young, my job would be, okay, you're going to just be sous chef. You're going to do the chopping. You're going to wash the greens. You're going to do this. You're going to do that. So then as I became older, then I got, you know, my assignment. And we didn't have like, I have been to Thanksgivings with my in-laws where there were dueling dressings and dueling pies and dueling, but we...
I have been to those. And it's, there's some aunt who comes and some cousin, and it's like, you knew I was going to be bringing the potato salad. Right. Why did you bring potato salad? Well, I make better potato. I knew you were going to bring potato salad, and it's terrible. Right.
Yeah, and you always put those bell peppers in your potato. Nobody wants bell peppers in there. And I've been to those. They're fun. And the crazy thing is they're usually both really good. And I'm like, I could go either way. They're both really, really good.
Or like somebody made one and then somebody made the other. And it's like, okay, well, you have what you're missing and you have what you're missing. So sometimes I just like make a smushy combination thing. And it's better. It's better. If people want to find you on social media, and they absolutely should, how do people do that?
I am Epicurious Expeditions across platforms, and I have it written on. Can they see that?
No, but I'll put it in
the notes. They can't see it. Okay, yes. I am Epicurious Expeditions across platforms everywhere that I can be found. I am on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. I just joined Snapchat. I'm also on Threads. I just joined Snapchat. I haven't put my content up there yet. But yeah, that I'm Epicurious Expeditions.
People like watch. I don't see. I'm afraid of Snapchat.
And I'm
afraid
new,
of Snapchat. And I'm afraid of Reddit. I don't
have
do either.
A Reddit.
I'm scared.
I have a Reddit. People are so unkind, but also brilliant on Reddit.
See,
so when I need information.
Like, oh no, if I want like an answer, I go to Reddit. If I want to find out, I go to Reddit. See, and I'm like, okay, but like, Reddit makes the YouTube comment section look
look kind sweet. And gentle.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't, my, I'm a baby. I don't think I can handle it.
We lurk on Reddit. We just lurk on Reddit.
I don't even have an account.
Because
I don't have an account. I don't have an account. I'm not lurking. I'm terrified of it. I'm like, nope. I'm gonna the night is dark and full of terrors over on Reddit. I'm scared of it.
It's wild west over there.
You can like upload stuff. I thought it disappeared.
I think you can save to memories. Okay. I haven't started yet, so I'm just speculating.
See, I don't have a Snapchat either, because I'm like, no, I'm married. That's scary. I don't want
to. I've also been warned to be careful of the snaps I receive, and I'm like, oh,
that's
my God.
The thing.
Let's see how
like,
this goes.
I've seen what my Instagram DM requests look like. Like, I don't have those open, but like, you can still request. I don't think I can turn that off. And I've seen those requests. I will say it did get a lot better when. I don't like to give Meta credit for anything, but they did give you the option that if I haven't accepted your DM request, you can't send me photos anymore. So that's
which
a thing.
Is good.
That's a
which
good
is
thing.
Good.
That's one of the better things that Meta's done.
Luckily, I haven't gotten anything crazy in the DMs.
Just
well,
wait.
Besides, you know, the threats and the name calling, but no, nothing graphic. So thank goodness for that.
Yeah, it's so fun. You can have, you get, just wait. You know what? I hope that it never happens for you because it's gross.
I hope so too. I should knock on, there's nothing wood near me, but I should knock on wood. I should definitely.
Oh my gosh. Carolyn, thank you so much for being here. It has been such a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
I have been such a fan. Like, your content has been one of the highlights of my year. I am such a big fan of you and your platform and what it is that you're doing, and not only how you're celebrating and appreciating food, but also making food accessible for people, which, you know, in a world, especially on social media, where we're just constantly told that like food is hard and it should be hard, and you're not eating enough protein, you're not eating enough fiber, you're not eating it. You simplify it, you make it fun, you make it enjoyable, we'll laugh, we'll appreciate it, and we feel like we can do it no matter how much ability or time you have. And that is such a special and rare gift. So thank you so much for what you do. And thank you so much for being here with me.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been a blast. I really appreciate you inviting me on. And it's a blessing to be able to talk about, you know, all of these things. And I'm thankful that I've been given a platform. So thank you so much.
And that is going to do it here for this episode of Head on Fire. My thanks to my guest, Carolyn of Epicurious Expeditions. Make sure to go follow her right now if you aren't already. If you like the show and you want to support it, there are a number of ways to help. The easiest is telling a friend. That free word of mouth is the best way to grow this show. Just tell people, hey, I really like this podcast. It's super cool. Another thing that you could do, if you've got a dollar, or you got more than a dollar, you can sign up for my Patreon. Patreon.com/headonfirepod is where you can get early access to ad-free episodes, full-length conversations, and fun little goodies. The people that sign up for Patreon, they got all of the wallpapers for Verity Vox and the Curse of Foxfire. They've gotten to read little snippets. I think they got to read like my entire third collection of poetry. I think I just like dumped that on there like a year ago or something. So they get all sorts of little free goodies as I have them to give. I will tell you that no matter what level you sign up for, all the tiers get the same benefits because I realize that times are hard and your support at all just means the world to me. So if you want to support me and you want to support this show, you can get some free goodies for a dollar or $100 or whatever you can at patreon.com/headonfirepod. You can also find me at bydonmartin.com, bydonmartin, and you can find me all over social media at bydonmartin. I'm going to go. If you're in the U.S., happy Thanksgiving. If you're everybody else, happy Tuesday. Thank you so much for tuning in, downloading, streaming, and sharing with your friends. Please, please, please never, ever stop seeking illumination like a man with his head on fire seeks water. Be well.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.